Good day, and welcome to Alpek's first quarter 2014 earnings results conference call. With us this morning, we have from Alpek, José Valdés, CEO, Eduardo Escalante, CFO, and Hernán Lozano, Head of Investor Relations, who will discuss the company's performance and answer any questions that you might have. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded and will be available on the company's website, www.alpek.com. I'll now hand the call over to Mr. Lozano. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, and welcome to our first quarter 2014 earnings conference call. We very much appreciated everyone's participation today. As we typically do, this call will be divided into two parts. First, Mr. Valdés, our CEO, will provide some insights about the industry and the major investment projects we have underway. Then, Mr. Escalante, our CFO, will discuss Alpek's first quarter results and outlook for the remainder of the year. Afterwards, we will open up for a Q&A session. Before we get started, let me remind you that information discussed on today's call may include forward-looking statements regarding the company's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risks and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to place undue reliance on these forward-looking statements. Alpek undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn the call over to Mr. José Valdés.
Thank you, Hernán. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us this morning. Alpek's operational results and underlying margins were in line with our expectations. Excluding this quarter's extraordinary inventory devaluation charge for $22 million. As anticipated, we began to see some sequential progress in reference PTA and PET margins in Asia as we move towards the end of first quarter. If this trend extends into the coming months, we could expect pressure in global polyester markets to ease gradually as Asian margins return to more sustainable levels. Also in line with our outlook, the favorable market dynamics that benefit EPS and polypropylene on the last quarter last year started to normalize during this first quarter. Mainly the spread between Asian and North American styrene prices that boosted EPS results in 2013 has decreased significantly, lowering margins. However, it was surprising to see such a steep decline in polyester feedstock prices during the first quarter, mainly paraxylene. Paraxylene is the main raw material for PTA and consequently the most important feedstock in our polyester segment. To reference, paraxylene prices in Asia accelerated the downward trend after fourth quarter 2013, reaching levels as low or even a little bit lower than $1,200 per ton in March, compared to an average price of approximately $1,500 per ton in 2013. Even more important is the margins of paraxylene to naphtha, which went from high $500s in 2013 to high $200s in March. According to industry experts, this decrease was mainly driven by speculation regarding incremental paraxylene capacity coming online in Asia, particularly Korea and China, and in the Middle East, in the second half of this year. Estimates suggest that there is limited further downside risk from current Asian paraxylene price levels based on its implicit spread to naphtha that I just mentioned. However, it is difficult to predict how much prices may recover during the year. Certainly, low paraxylene prices contributed to the recovery of reference PTA and PET margins in Asia, but this magnitude of feedstock price volatility is not ideal for a sustainable recovery of global polyester market, particularly due to inventory margins on part of the customers that reduce their demand as they expect prices to come down. Despite the volatile industry conditions, Alpek's first quarter consolidated volume grew 5% when compared to the fourth quarter, and underlying margins evolved as we have anticipated. Polyester segment EBITDA, however, was negatively impacted by the inventory devaluation charge that Eduardo will discuss shortly. Yet, cash flow generation during the first quarter was very strong, and net debt decreased almost $100 million, even as we invested $44 million, mainly in strategic projects. Our 95-megawatt Cosoleacaque cogeneration plant is moving ahead as planned, with preliminary testing on the way. We expect the plant to be mechanically completed by the end of this month, perhaps a month delay relative to the previous estimate. We expect the start-up by the end of second quarter and its cost saving to be reflected shortly thereafter. Other strategic projects, such as the Corpus Christi PTA PET site, polypropylene storage sphere, and the caprolactam technology upgrade, remain on track. Regarding our MEG integration project, we have no new developments to report since our last conference call, other than discussion with Pemex continue to move forward. And as we told you in our last conference in February, Pemex is supposed to confirm availability of ethane during the month of May. In summary, first quarter results largely reflect the challenges that we have anticipated having into 2014. We remain fully committed to continue investing actively in a combination of short and long-term initiatives that will drive significant cost savings and strengthen our position for improved profitability in the next top cycle. I would like to turn the call over to Eduardo to discuss our financial results.
Thank you, Pepe, and good morning, everyone. I will cover now some of the key financial highlights for the quarter. Alpek's financial results reflected this quarter's steep decline in paraxylene, which is our most important feedstock. First quarter consolidated revenue was $1.6 billion, down 2% sequentially and 14% year over year, driven by lower prices. Consolidated volume was up quarter on quarter, but average prices dropped significantly following polyester feedstock prices. The effect of declining polyester feedstock prices on Alpek's EBITDA was twofold. First, we recognized the $22 million non-cash inventory devaluation charge. Typically, this line item is not relevant in the context of Alpek's consolidated results, and it tends to be offset through time by normal price volatility. However, such a steep feedstock price decline as the one we experienced in the first quarter resulted in an extraordinary inventory devaluation charge for the period. Besides the non-cash inventory charge, declining feedstock prices also created a temporary mismatch between sales prices and average feedstock costs that pressures margins. Our cost-plus pricing mechanism helps minimize this effect, but we do have some exposure to raw material price volatility under the current circumstances. As a result, consolidated EBITDA for the quarter was $105 million, down 20% and 34% when compared to fourth quarter and first quarter 2013, respectively. Excluding the non-cash inventory charge, first quarter EBITDA was $127 million. The underlying results in each of our business segments were in line with our expectations. Polyester volume grew 6% quarter on quarter despite an adverse pricing environment, and polyester EBITDA was 2% higher than the fourth quarter after adjusting for the $22 million inventory charge. Moreover, plastics and chemicals reported higher volume, revenue, and EBITDA year-over-year. The segment sequential decline was expected and reflects lower polypropylene and EPS profitability as margins normalize after reaching record high previous quarters. Moving down the P&L, we reported majority net income of $24 million during the first quarter, up from a $9 million loss in the fourth quarter, but 61% lower when compared to the first quarter of last year. The year-on-year decrease is mainly due to a 40% reduction in operating income, driven by lower polyester results and a 93% increase in comprehensive financing expense, resulting from an $11 million net effect in non-cash foreign exchange losses. Now, let me move on to our cash flow and balance sheet. CapEx during the quarter was $44 million, up 91% when compared to fourth quarter 2013. It is important to note that the increase in CapEx was more than offset by a very strong cash flow generation. First quarter net debt was $668 million, down 13% or $98 million from year-end 2013, even as we continue investing actively in our strategic projects. Gross debt was flat year-over-year, and the company's leverage and interest coverage ratios stand at 1.3 and 6.4 times respectively. I would like to wrap up this section of the call with a brief comment on Alpek 2014 guidance. We were not expecting this quarter's $22 million inventory devaluation charge when we provided our original guidance for 2014. At this time, there is limited visibility to determine whether the inventory charge may be partially or fully offset during the rest of the year. Looking ahead, estimates suggest that further downside risk in reference Asian paraxylene prices is limited. Certainly, a recovery in those prices would be positive for Alpek's results going forward, but we have to wait and see how this situation evolves. As a result, we are maintaining our $570 million full-year EBITDA guidance as we continue to closely monitor market developments. This concludes my remarks, and I would now like to open the call for questions. Operator, please instruct the participants on how to place their questions.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, please dial star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are on a speakerphone, please be sure that your mute function is turned off. Once again, that is star 1 for questions, and we'll pause for just a moment. And once again, that is star 1 for questions, and we'll pause for just a moment. We'll take our first question from Gustavo Catas with BTG.
Hi, guys. I had two questions, if I could. Really want to touch on first on the point of the impact that sustained improvement in the Asian margins could have on your perception of full-year guidance. Okay, so whether or not you can actually talk about that and just give us an indication of what it would mean on your mind in the event that the, say, improvement of the end of the first quarter were to be consistent throughout the year. Okay. And if I could, I just wanted to ask you whether or not you guys have confidence that the cogeneration plant is going to start at the end of the second quarter. We saw that in the press release, you guys are doing tests and everything on the unit right now, but just wanted to have a feel of whether or not those are going well, if we could. Thank you.
Okay, let me answer your questions. Regarding the PET margins, PTA margins to paraxylene and glycolinasia, as we mentioned in the last conference, since September last year, the PET margins to PX and glycol have been below the 200 threshold. Have been around 180 or below 200. Starting in February, we saw an improvement to 215, and in March we saw 242 of margin. And as we speak, the margins are north of 250, which is pretty much what we assumed in our estimate, that the margins of PET in Asia would be around the 250 US dollar per ton. So again, if the margins remain there, that's pretty much what we have contemplated in our guidance, in our estimate. With regards to your second question, we believe that the cogeneration plant will be ready sometime this month. We're planning now to start to, you know, do some tests, perhaps in May. But the key question in our mind right now, in order to see when we start up the plant, will be the interconnection with CFE. Okay, so to a certain extent, we depend on CFE to authorize the interconnection with them. And we do hope that we will be able to do that end of May, beginning of June. And that's as much as I can say right now.
Perfect. If I could just do a very quick question for Eduardo. The 22 million write-off charge, just from an accounting perspective, was that booked inside cost of goods sold?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is, Gustavo. Basically, this charge, as we mentioned before, is typically not relevant in the context of our results. But in this case, the price decline was so big that it had this big effect. Just to give you an idea, the paraxylene price at the end of last year was $1,550, and at the end of March it was $1,400. So just from the end of last year, there was a $150 decline in the market price of paraxylene. So when you consider that in our whole system we have normally around 250,000 tons of paraxylene, both in paraxylene as well as the equivalent within our PTA and PET inventory. That's why the charge was so significant this quarter.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
You're welcome.
We'll take our next question from Ivan Enriquez with HSBC.
Hola, Pepe, Eduardo, Hernan. Thank you for the call. My question is regarding your caprolactam business. I mean, surprisingly, I didn't see any reference of this business, which I think it's not performing that well. So could you please give us an update on the caprolactam business and also the overcapacity problem that has been faced in Asia in this product? And the second question would be if you can give us any progress on the MEG integration plant with the MEG integration project with Pemex site. That would be helpful. Thank you.
Ivan, you are right. Our caprolactam business is not doing that well, but it is in the first quarter. The results were a little bit better than budgeted, a little bit better, but you know, slightly positive. Okay, but we already budgeted that. You're right. The overcapacity in Asia has been a problem, but we were able to again have similar to budget result in during the first quarter. I think right now what is posing a little bit of a challenge for us going forward is as a result of the situation in Ukraine. The ammonia prices have gone up, and this increase in ammonia prices, which we hoped will be temporary, have not yet been reflected in the prices of caprolactam and ammonium sulfate. So this is the one thing that we are a little bit concerned about for the next months. But again, in the context of Alpek, this is a relatively small component right now. So that would be the first question. With regards to the MEG project, as I mentioned, and I think we talked about this last time, Pemex is supposed to confirm the availability of ethane in May. We expect that they will confirm. We're waiting for a positive reply from them. After that, once they confirm the ethane is available, of course, then we have to accelerate our discussions with them in terms of the joint venture. And we would hope by the end of next quarter to be able to announce a more, firm agreement with them. The next step after we have an agreement with them, we will extend our exclusivity agreement with them, the next step would be to commit some funds for engineering so that we can have a better cost estimate for the project before having the board approval for this investment. Okay, and that might be 3-4 months after that. I don't know, Eduardo, if you agree with this, but that would be more or less my expectation.
Yes, absolutely, Pepe. And I would like to add, in the case of caprolactam, I think it's important to mention that we continue moving forward with the technology upgrade that we are doing in our plant in Mexico. The project is on a schedule, and as we have discussed before, we expect to be up and running in the second half of this year, and we hope to be able to get the benefits starting 2014.
Okay, excellent. Just another quick question on the DCM, on the caprolactam technology after you're planning. I understand that you're planning to do this with a company DSM, but I think this company is looking for a strategic opportunity for its caprolactam business. Would that affect in any sense, or would that have any impact on your, technology licensing agreement with them? Thanks.
Eduardo, why don't you answer that question?
Sure. Ivan. Really, the regardless of the project that DSM has to define their caprolactam strategy, they continue pursuing the technology. Let me call it the technology development business. We have the licensing of their technology. So we do not expect to have any problems with the project. In fact, we have been discussing with them to do a second phase later on of a technology upgrade of another section of our plant. So we do not expect any problems with this.
Okay, thank you very much, guys.
If you find your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the question queue by pressing star 2 on your telephone keypad. We'll take our next question from Vanessa Quiroga with Credit Suisse.
Hi, thank you, Pepe Rodernan, for the call. My question is regarding the methodology of the devaluation of inventory. I was wondering if you could be more specific about what price it's used for this calculation. I was wondering if the methodology uses 12-month average prices of the raw materials or last quarter average. And that would be my first question. And then I had a question about your customers' volume contracts in North America. Would you like to answer the first question and then I go ahead with the second one?
Yes, Eduardo, why don't you answer the first question, please?
Sure. Thank you, Vanessa, for your question. As I mentioned before, the paraxylene affects both its own inventory as well as the PTA and PET inventory, and the calculation is based on the last purchase price of paraxylene during the quarter. So we use the price level that was at the end of the period.
Okay. So this is something that basically reflects the spot the spot prices at the end of each quarter. Is that correct?
No, not the spot, Vanessa. Contract.
Okay, your contract.
Around contract price. The actual purchasing price.
Okay. Excellent. And then the other question is about the rollover of the contracts with your customers in North America. Because although we understand that there's that cost plus formula in North America that determines the PTA price, we understand that in some cases there can be negotiations with customers, and given that the spread between the margins in Asia and North America has remained wide for more than a year now, we were wondering here if you are having this kind of negotiations with customers where they are requiring maybe some discount to the cost-plus formula. So if you could confirm that this is happening and how much of your contracts you think are exposed to this kind of negotiations. Thanks.
Vanessa, our contracts with domestic customers have a cost-plus formula, and for the most part, these are long-term contracts with a fixed discount or whatever. So it's a cost plus, that remains year over year. However, to a certain extent, a certain percentage of or a certain volume from our customer, PET, is exported to outside North America. Okay, so in these cases, In the case of the PET that is exported outside of North America, we negotiate with them constantly adjustments so that they can continue to export PET. But for the most part of the purchases, which are for North America, the cost plus formula applies.
Okay. Thanks, Pepe. And for the North American contracts, about what percentage is rolled over each year, or is there a concentration of expiration of contracts in a specific year?
Well, we have our contracts today last until the end of 2015.
Okay. Okay, excellent. Thanks.
And our next question comes from Nikolai Lipman with Morgan Stanley.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for the call and for taking my questions. I have a couple of questions. First on the cycle, then on export, and finally a quick question on the expansion in Texas. On the cycle, can you just help us to understand the price level of cotton where you would see some substitution in Asia? If you're already starting, this cotton has been rallying, if you're starting to see some of that. And also, if that is one of the, just your thinking around keeping the guidance, which looks difficult now, is that because, all these things are down, PX, Glycol, are you sure, it appears that no one is making money in the cycle. Are you expecting, maybe PTA to sort of have a bit of a rebound? It's just your thinking around that. Then in terms of export, very quickly, can you give us a sense of what was your export this quarter? Is it up, down, vis-a-vis last year? And then finally, in Texas, if you can provide us a bit of an update on how that project is going, especially given that M&G failed to make an IPO, what would be the security of the world if they failed to meet some of the cash benchmarks that you have lined out? That's it for me. Thanks.
Well, okay. Well, let's start with the what you mentioned about PTA margins in Asia. PTA margins, let's start with the cotton price, if you wish. The cotton price, as you say, has been improving. In the past, I think this was significant when PTA, PX capacity was relatively tight. We do believe there is ample capacity right now in the market to substitute cotton, so I don't believe that's going to be a big impact. It's certainly going to be, a higher volume will help, but I don't think it's going to be a very, very significant impact. The PX, the margins of particularly when you look at PET margins, I mentioned they are going from less than $200 to $250. Most of the increase is now happening on the PTA side of the business. I believe I mentioned last conference call that our estimates are that in Asia last couple of years, I would say, the PTA producers have been losing money at a rate of $2 billion per year. Margins of PET have not been that bad, surprising. They have been relatively similar to historical levels, but margins of PTA, which were normally in the 150 range before, went to $60 end of last year. Right now we see the margins of PX going like to $90. So most of the improvement, again, or significant portion of the improvement has been going to PTA. And again, as we mentioned before, we believe the prices that we had at the end of last year were not sustainable, particularly when all these people are burning so much cash. Okay? So I would say that's the situation, Nikolai. I don't know if I forgot another portion of your question.
No, that's perfect. And then on the export, can you just give us a sense of, what are you seeing in the market? Are you exporting more or less? What's the percentage of volume perhaps that you are exporting this quarter?
We are exporting about the same. We're exporting about the same quantity. There are certain customers that, again, when you ask of exports, let me explain. There are two types of exports for us. One is indirect exports, which is actually PTA that we sell to our customers that in turn they export PET. So on that part of business has been relatively stable. They seem to have their natural markets and they are supplying their national markets. There have been not very significant changes. And then exports of PTA from our side, in terms of volume, we are pretty much operating at capacity over PTA plants. In Mexico, we sell the plants that export. The U.S. plants do not export. The U.S. plant is fully used for domestic market. But in Mexico, we do have a significant, 600,000 ton export, direct export capacity. We are exporting most of it right now to South America and Europe. And we do, yeah, we do experience some volatility in those margins, depending on the Asian prices. Not like a month-to-month change, but it certainly impacts, I mean, the Asian prices have an impact on that. The last question, I think, had to do with the project in Texas. As far as we know, M&G has secured the financing for the project. They have financing from a Mexican bank, financing from an export bank, or from a bank in China for the exports of equipment, and I understand they have another bank, another European bank that has also lend them money for the project. So as far as we know, they have the funds to move ahead with the project, and the project is moving ahead pretty much on schedule.
Many thanks.
Our next question comes from Felipe Santos with J.P. Morgan.
Hi, gentlemen. Thanks so much. Just a quick question. Would this devaluation of the $32 billion would change anything how you handle the inventory that you have, or you could see a positive impact if the prices go up again over the next quarters? This is the reason that you would be maintaining as well your guidance for the year?
Well, I believe. I will try to answer, Eduardo, and if I miss anything, you help me. You complement what I'm saying. I think Eduardo sort of explained that in his presentation earlier. For us, normally, when paraxylene prices go down, remember we have a significant portion of our contracts cost plus, which means that raw material prices go down, our prices go down immediately. Okay? So the inventory we keep at the end of the month is impacted, okay, with the value. When the prices of paraxylene go up, the opposite happens. Since it's cost plus, the prices go up immediately, and if we have lower cost paraxylene, then we revalue that raw material also immediately. So again, it's absurd, or sort of absurd, but you know, this cost plus system forces us to have this situation. But raw material prices go down, normally you should be happy. But no, since we have to reduce our price immediately, our results take a hit. Paraxylene or raw material price goes up, we have an immediate revaluation of the, I mean, we increase prices immediately, so the value of our inventory goes up immediately as well. So that's the situation. And the question, I mean, the second part of your question, let's say, is a more difficult. Let's say, paraxylene prices went to go back up to the $1,500 per ton level, well, yes, in theory, what we lost, we should recover. Okay? However, as I said, we believe the prices will recover from the level, from the 1,200 level. We believe they're going to go up a bit, but not back to the 1,500, because there is no, without question, there is more capacity of paraxylene coming, and if, you know, the margins we were experiencing last year, somewhere between $550 and $600 of paraxylene versus naphtha, I believe are not going to be sustained. Reinvestment level for paraxylene is more like in the $450. So I don't know. I mean, a more reasonable level of margin would be, let's say, 4 to 450, which means, yeah, from where they are today, there is an upside, but not all the way back to the $1,500 per ton. Okay. The other factor that also is important, the paraxylene price has two components. One is the naphtha price, which depends on crude oil price. So again, crude oil prices go up, but paraxylene prices normally would go up. So to be able to forecast paraxylene prices, you have to forecast crude oil price and the margin. So again, if you assume that the naphtha prices are going to remain constant throughout the year, it's the margin that is going to make the difference. And again, the margin today below $300 of paraxylene to naphtha, I believe is on the low side. So I would expect perhaps going back to $350, $400.
Okay. Okay, thanks so much.
We'll take our next question from Jose Vasquez with GBM.
Hi, Eduardo and Pepe. Good morning. I was wondering, we saw during the quarter a 20% decline in the paraxylene prices, but we just saw around 80% decline in the polyester chain revenues. Could we expect that on the next quarters the decline in revenues would match the decline in paraxylene prices, or are the cost flows or your strength on the chain would mitigate this fall? Thank you very much.
Remember, Jose, that in our case, again, since we have a cost-plus system, cost-plus calculated formula, remember that the percentage of paraxylene decrease is hardly ever similar. Decrease or increase is hardly ever similar to the increase in PTA or PET prices. Because, you know, paraxylene, let's assume paraxylene goes down 10% or $100 per ton, whatever. You know, only a part of that impacts over, only the absolute value of that increase changes in our prices. Okay? So it's paraxylene, let me just explain. If PTA is $1,000 and paraxylene is $600 of that, or $700, if paraxylene goes down $70, which is 10%, the PTA price goes down only $70, which is 7%. And so I don't know if I'm saying, our cost plus only changes the absolute value of the paraxylene that is used to manufacture the PTA. It is not the case that if paraxylene decreases 10%, we decrease our price 10%.
Okay.
It's only the absolute value that what we consider. Okay.
Okay. Very clear. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll take our next question from Juan Lopez with BTG Pactual.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for the conference call. If you could just disclose how much of the $570 million EBITDA you project for this year will come from the strategic project?
Okay. Eduardo, could you answer that question, please?
Sure. There were mainly three projects considered in the guidance for this year. One was the cogeneration project. The other one was the DSM technology upgrade in our caprolactam plant. And the third was the benefits from the K-Fuel shutdown of last year. In the case of the cogen, we expect to be between $20 and $25 million $20 and $25 million of benefits for this year. The DSM technology upgrade has a benefit of $9 million for a whole year. We expect to get about half of that this year during the second half. And in the case of Cape Fear, we expect to be between $25 and $30 million benefit from last year. So all in all, we have around $50 to $55 million benefits in our guidance.
Okay, that's very helpful. And so when you mentioned that margins in paraxylene may get back to 350, what kind of EBITDA margin you are assuming for the polyester chain for the year? Obviously not assuming that the strategic project.
Well, I don't know. Again, I think it's, I don't recall exactly, but in our budget, we were estimating PX to be around 1,400 or 1,350. But so perhaps, I don't know what the type of margin that we have assumed there, Eduardo. So perhaps you can help me with that question.
Yeah, it is just slightly below the 380-390 per ton.
Okay, so the margin that we are assuming for paraxylene is 380. That's what you're saying, Eduardo, right? 380 versus 300 that we have.
No, what I'm saying is the EBITDA from polyester, if we get an increase in the margins that we are expecting, in particular during the summer months, we expect to be around $390 to $400 million. In EBITDA from polyester for the year.
Okay. That is with 1,400 paraxylene, right?
Why don't you let us check on that and Eduardo, and you send him the information. I don't want to commit to the 1,400 number. It might be a little bit less than that already, because this price was going down throughout the year. That's what I don't have a number in my head, but...
Yeah, sure. I understand and appreciate all of your help. And lastly, if I may, the CapEx figure for the year, do you have any updates for this year? And maybe you could share some figure for 2015.
Okay, Eduardo, you have numbers for that?
Sure. In the guidance, we included a capex of $300 million for 2014. Our projects are, as we discussed, pretty much on schedule. For this quarter, it was $44 million, but we expect that number to increase in the next quarters. Out of the $300 million that we provided as guidance, we have about $40 to $50 million of maintenance capex. So the rest is for strategic projects, about $250 million, which again, we continue on a schedule to invest that amount this year.
Okay, and regarding 2015,
I think the MEG project is going to be important for that. It depends very much on the MEG project. Okay,
I see.
Yes, we still don't have a set amount for next year, because there are several projects that we are still analyzing, but as Pepe mentioned, we have an important project as the M&G project for next year, as well as we should start investing in the second cogeneration plant in Altamira.
Right.
Okay, and many thanks.
We'll take our next question from Christina Ronak with HSBC.
Hi, thank you. I just noticed that your working capital benefit for the first quarter was 800 million pesos. A lot of it has to do with inventory benefits. Can you just give us some guidance on how you expect working capital to look for the year?
Okay, well, again, Christina, this is a very important question. And as you can imagine, this decrease in working capital is also very much related to the feedstock prices or to the product filing prices. When we have a reduction in paraxylene prices, our working capital goes down. Okay? And when we have an increase in prices, our working capital normally goes up. I would say this first quarter was very good in terms of reducing working capital. I guess most of this reduction or an important portion of this reduction came as a result of the lower paraxylene prices. But there was also some improvements in efficiency in the days of working capital. Again, the development of the working capital is going to be very much related to what happens with the paraxylene crisis.
Okay?
I don't know if...
Thank you.
I mean, if the paraxylene prices stay where they are, you know, the working capital should stay very fairly similar.
We'll take our next question from Chelsea Consco with Tia Kress.
Hi. I just wanted to be sure that I understand the breakdown of the margins in the polyester chain. You mentioned that you're assuming around 250 for the PET margin, I believe, PET minus paraxylene. What is the breakdown of that? For PTA and for PET?
Yeah, well, again, Chelsea, these are the margins in Asia. Okay?
Okay.
These are margins in Asia. These are not margins in North America. But in Asia, I'll give you an example. In, let's say in the fourth quarter last year, okay? The margins were in average $180, of which $130 was PET to PTA and glycol, and approximately $50 were PTA to paraxylene. Okay? I'll not give you the number in March. The number in March, the total margin was 242, out of which 160, roughly, was PET, and like $80 was PTA to paraxylene.
Okay. And so what you expect to improve is the PTA to paraxylene.
Yes, we expect that the PTA to paraxylene will go up to hopefully $90 to $100 per ton, at least.
Got it. And how do North American margins compare, roughly?
Well, North American margins are you know, probably significantly higher than these, like. I would say it would normally be in the $450 to $500 total.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Our next question comes from Rafael Escobar with Vector.
Thank you, gentlemen. Good morning. Some of my questions were already answered, but by the way, I have one question. If I may, about your P&L, what is the tax rate applied in the quarter, and the reasons that we see that the percentage compares with the income before taxes were about 60%?
Okay, Eduardo, would you help me with this question, please?
Yeah, can you, Rafael, can you repeat the question, please?
Yes, it's regarding about the tax rate that you applied in the quarter, compared with the percentage, with the income before taxes. I see that the percentage that you are applying or compare is about 60%. It's quite different than the quarters, the previous quarters, the taxes.
Okay.
Is it clear?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. The tax rate that we apply is very similar to other quarters, Rafael. What happened is when you compare the amount versus last quarter, then there is a significant change. Because there was an adjustment last year due to a change in the deferred income tax rate that went from 28% to 30% in the fourth quarter of 2013. But that was just a one-time effect. So we are back to normal levels now.
About 30, no?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
And our next question comes from Fernando Val with Citi.
Good morning. Actually, it's Pedro Medeiros. Thanks for taking the question. And I have two very quick questions. All of my questions around the results were already answered. The first one is, do you mind to give us an update on the current status for projects on the new generation plant in Altamira and on the execution of the propylene storage sphere for the PP business? And my second question is, considering the current down cycle and the stressful moment in polyester, and when we combine that to your healthy balance sheet and free cash flow generation, would you see potential opportunities for M&A surfacing in the short term? And do you mind to confirm if you're engaged in any negotiation at the moment?
Okay. With regard to your second question, we're always looking to, for opportunities to do M&A. We are not seriously engaged in any opportunity right now. We're looking at, different alternatives, but we're not engaged in any other one right now. With respect to your question was about the cogeneration of Altamira. I have to say we've continued to, refine the project. The latest information or the latest plan we have is that the plant could be very close now to 300 megawatts. We were considering before, I don't know if you remember, we were talking about 250, 260. The latest information that we have been reviewing it's stretching this a little bit to 300 megawatts. The latest project that we're developing is around 300 megawatts. And again, we will be able to have more information soon. But it will be a bigger project, and with slightly better efficiency than we have foreseen before. So it's a technology improvement from one of the suppliers of equipment that is helping us change a little bit the scope of the project. With respect to the propylene storage project, Eduardo, again, you could probably help me with that.
Yes, the investment for the sphere is underway. As we have discussed before, we expect to have an incremental EBITDA of around $8 million per year from it. We did invest roughly about $500,000 in this first quarter for the first stages of the project.
And Eduardo, do you mind to update on the potential timeline for this future startup?
Excuse me, can you repeat your question, Pedro, please?
Yeah, I was asking about the timeline for the sphere to be ready to operate.
Oh, it should be ready by mid-2015.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, guys.
And we'll take our final question from Vanessa Quiroga with Credit Suisse.
Hi, sorry for the for coming in again with another question. Since it's been already an hour for the call, thanks for taking it. Also, I just wanted to clarify on the cash flow summary that you provide, that there is no adjustment for the inventory devaluation line. The working capital contribution, positive contribution that we see, is directly coming from that changes in the inventory line of the balance sheet, but it's not a direct adjustment to the inventory devaluation line that affected EBITDA. Is that correct?
The $22 million, Vanessa, is included in the working capital calculation for the quarter.
Okay, so on top of that adjustment, there were some other changes in the inventory inventory lines, right? On the balance sheet.
Yes,
that's normal calculation of the working capital. Okay.
Yes, basically coming from changes in volume.
Okay. Okay, excellent. Thanks for clarifying.
You're welcome. And that does conclude today's question and answer portion of the call. At this time, I'd like to turn things back over to the presenters for closing remarks.
Thank you. And we very much appreciate everyone's participation in today's call, and we look forward to maintaining an open dialogue with all market participants. Please feel free to contact us if you have any additional comments or questions. Thank you very much for joining our call. Goodbye.
That does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation.